5 o'clock in Utah.
Ding, ding, ding.
And it's time for today's big interview with Bill and OC on ESPN 700.
Okay, you happy?
That's better.
The big interview is brought to you by Wasatch Front Kia, 895 West Riverdale Road in Ogden. Now for today's big interview, here are Bill and OC on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Bill and OC Show, ESPN 700, coming to you live from Jordan-L State Park. A delightful, delightful Tuesday afternoon, 48 hours away from our NBA draft coverage beginning. You'll have me, you'll have Sean, you'll have Gordy Chiesa and Andy Larson from Salt City Hoops. We'll all be in studio. We'll have folks downtown at Energy Solutions Arena, at Jazz Basketball Headquarters, and of course, because we're the home of the NBA draft, we'll have every pick for you as it comes down the line right here on ESPN 700. Our next guest, he'll be a big part of ESPN's draft coverage. He always is. He is their lead NBA draft insider. Always a pleasure to have back with us here in Salt Lake City to talk draft 48 hours out. The great Chad Ford with us here on the Bill and OC Show. What do you say, Chad?
How's it going, guys?
We are we're good. We're excited. You know, you always get a little buzz around the, around this area a couple of days out from the draft. It's interesting this year. The Jazz are in the lottery, but they don't have a glaring lottery need. It's all kind of about depth. And so when they say we'll take the best player available, I think we can actually believe Dennis Lindsay when he says we're going to take the best player available.
I think we can, and I think it's tough to predict who the Jazz will take because the guys drafting ahead of them, it's a bit unpredictable right now. I do believe that this team will not draft for need. I don't think they'll draft for the player that's going to help them the most right now because I think they believe that in free agency they'll be able to add a few veterans that will help support this young team coming off the bench. I think they're going to take a long view of this, and they're going to take the player that they think in 3 years will be the best player that was available to them at 12.
Where does this year's draft start to destabilize, so to speak? It seems like pretty much all the mocks have it. 1-2 is going to be Okafor and Towns or vice versa. And then I've seen, you know, some people with Porzingis or Moutier or whomever in that 3-4 spot. Is that where it gets interesting immediately in that 3-4? That's where there's some disagreement on who goes where?
Well, look, whenever you have three of the most dysfunctional franchises in the NBA drafting 3, 4, and 6, between Philadelphia, between New York, and then Sacramento, you know, all fighting for the most backward, incompetent, you know, front office in the league. And I really shouldn't say that about Philly because I think Philly has a plan, whether you agree with it or not. They have a plan. I don't think the Knicks have a plan. I don't think Sacramento's got 30 plans. It just depends on the time of day. It's a mess. So, yeah, I mean, knowing what Philly is doing is going to be hard because Philly's doing 10 things at the same time, and that destabilizes the draft. The Knicks are all over the place, tons of voices. Phil Jackson's going to have the ultimate say here, and Phil Jackson and some ways is a bit of a disconnected executive. And then you get to Sacramento where the owner thinks he's in charge, the coach thinks he's in charge, the general manager thinks he's in charge, and DeMarcus Cousins thinks he's in charge. You know, good luck trying to figure out which of those guys is making this decision on draft night.
We'll get to the Jazz in a second, Chad. You hit on something a minute ago, and it's Philadelphia. I'd be curious, as a guy who really follows the NBA and the draft very, very closely, what you make of Sam Hinkie and his alleged plan. How long can Philadelphia continue to compile assets? At what point in time does Philadelphia management, does ownership, does fans, does the team, at what point should we expect to see them actually beginning to get results? Because this thing's been going on for 2, 3, 4 years now.
Well, look, Sam Hinkie's smart, and he has a plan and giving credit for sticking to the plan. He hasn't backed out of it. He's stuck with it. It just depends on what you think of the plan. I'll say this about Sam Hinkie. I don't sure that there's anybody that works harder in the league. The guy watches a ton of basketball. I've been in workouts where there's guys that aren't even going to make the second round are at, and every other general manager's walked out of the gym, and there's Sam Hinkie still sitting there watching them. work out. That, you know, that impresses me. I mean, the guy's doing his job. It's just that he's got a view of the NBA that theoretically makes a lot of sense about, you know, how he's building this team, but practically runs up to the problem of you have to build a basketball team. And this isn't a hedge fund. And, you know, this isn't about speculating on futures and always trying to get one step ahead of everybody else, that you actually have to fill the team. And I think that's the challenge. I feel like that's the challenge right now with Philadelphia, is at what point is this about collecting assets and at what point is it about building the basketball team? And I know Sam Hinkie would say, in fairness, look, we're collecting assets so that we can build a basketball team. That's what Danny Ainge did in Boston. It's what other teams have done in the past. It's what Minnesota's done this time, and we just haven't collected enough assets yet. But they're sitting there at three, and there's a lot of pressure on them because Nerlens Noel, pretty good rookie season. Okay, that's one thing. Michael Carter-Williams traded. He's out of the mix. They have a bunch of future first-rounders. Great. Dario Saric, probably not coming over for 2 years, if that. Joel Embiid didn't play last year, might not play this year, considering his foot injury. And now you're sitting there at number three. This guy needs to be in Philadelphia. He needs to play. He's got to give fans some hope that here's another piece of the puzzle. And I don't know how that affects everything. If he sticks with the plan, it's Porzingis. That's who he should take. It fits the model. You take the player with the most upside. If he's starting to say, man, I got to appease people, like there's someone here that's got to fit and do something different, then I think it's Moutier or D'Angelo Russell.
We were talking about this earlier, Chad, with the DeMarcus Cousins and George Karl situation. Can old school coaches and new school players successfully coexist in NBA franchises? Or do you have to, if you're a coach more from the old school, do you have to hope that your GM and your owner want to draft a guy who's slightly more old school in his work ethic and things like that as a player?
Well, look, I think it's hard for Jazz fans to imagine this because they've always had a good franchise where from ownership to general managers and front office to head coach to players, pretty much everyone's collaborating and working together. I mean, even as Dennis Lindsay's taken over this team, I've spent a lot of time around the Jazz. It's been a lot of time around Dennis Lindsay and Justin Zanuck, and everybody's on the same page. They're all trying to win. They sometimes have different opinions about things, but they're all pulling in the same direction. In Sacramento, everyone's pulling on a different direction, and it's all agenda-driven. And that's the problem. Can George Karl coexist? Yes, if everyone buys into a common vision of where this team has to go. The problem is George Karl's been in the league a long time. He's got a vision of where the Kings should go. Vivek Ranadive is a brand new owner in the NBA. He thinks the NBA is outdated, old-fashioned. He wants to try new ideas. He's got a vision. You've got Vlade Divac coming in now, coming from a player's perspective, and he's got a vision going forward. And then DeMarcus Cousins is saying, man, no matter what we do, we're kind of the same team every year, and he has a vision of what he wants. And all of that is agenda-driven, and now it's to the point where, you know, there's snakes in the grass, and, you know, people are turning on each other. And look, it's up to the owner, ultimately, to come in and say, I'm going to bring in people that either share the vision or have the ability to communicate and collaborate to share the vision. And that's what's happening in Utah, and it's why I think it's a successful franchise. And that's why teams like Sacramento are so dysfunctional, because there's just none of that there.
ESPN, NBA draft guru, insider, whatever you want to call him, Chad Ford, he is with us here on the Bill and O.C. Show. I woke up this morning to Chad Ford's Grade A Mock Draft 2.0, and I scrolled quickly down with my NBA ESPN insider access to number 12, and much to my dismay, Chad Ford, you had the Jazz selecting a guy that I saw play three times in person this year when he played against Utah, Kevon Looney, a guy that has talent, I can see it, but he seemed to be very much a sleepwalking, choose-my-pick-and-spot type player. Now, I know you've seen him work out a little bit. Please convince me why Kevon Looney might be a good pick for the Jazz at number 12.
can I ask you, how can you sleepwalk to averaging a double-double as a freshman?
Well, in the two games I saw him play, he did not have a double-double. He was not a very good player against the Utes, so.
But that's, I mean, he almost averaged a double-double. He averaged the closest to that of any freshman in the country, and he had a couple things going on. He had a hip injury, and he had some conditioning issues because he wasn't able to practice all summer, yet he still put on that. And and it's actually more what I saw in high school from a kid who could play point guard at that position, that could shoot the three, that was forced because of the lack of personnel at UCLA to just be a four and asking him to kind of rebound. And towards the end of the season, you saw him do some stuff on the perimeter, but you didn't see 20% of what Looney can do. Now, look, here's the thing of why I put him there for the Jazz. The Jazz can afford to take a pick that doesn't contribute this year. And I think that there's two things about that. One reason Looney's dropping right now is there's some questions about his hip and whether he's going to need surgery on his hip. This isn't like a torn ACL or something like that where you worry about the long-term future of a guy, but it does mean that he's probably out 6 months with getting that hip repaired. That's going to scare some teams off who want their picks to come in right away. The second thing is he's clearly not ready from a strength standpoint, from figuring out what he is. He's not ready for the NBA, but I think the Jazz have a good developmental team. I think they have the patience to be able to put the work into Looney. And if Looney's healthy and if Looney develops, he has more talent than anybody else that's on the board. He can play a Lamar Odom sort of style of basketball. He's a high basketball IQ. He can handle, he can shoot. He's just not ready. And I understand why teams might pass, but that's the luxury of a team like the Utah Jazz, because they don't need Looney to play 25 minutes a night. They're gonna sign three, four veterans in free agency, two, three veterans or whatever it's gonna be in free agency that are gonna come in and help this team grow, and then you let Looney grow at his own rate. And you know, all I'll say is that they did that with Rudy Gobert. They knew Rudy wasn't necessarily a guy that was going to come in and play for them right away, but they believed in the long-term talent, and he developed quicker than everyone possibly thought he could develop. This kid has top five talent, in my opinion. It wasn't used correctly at UCLA, and he had other issues that kept him from achieving that.
I did like your second round picks, and I really like Rakeem Christmas. I know he's somewhat limited, but they do need some size, and I think he could be a nice backup to a Gobert or a Derek Favors, where they lack some of that size and physicality in the front court. Same thing with Larry Nance Jr.
Look, by the way, I'm not saying that was who I would pick. I'm not saying that's
sure,
who
sure,
the Jazz
sure.
will pick.
Sure.
I think it will be some combination of him, Trey Lyles, if Stanley Johnson's there, if Miles Turner is there, that's probably maybe outside chance of Bobby Portis. That's probably the group that Utah selects from. But if a Looney's there, and frankly, I'll throw another name out that will also be equally unpopular in Utah, and that's Kelly Oubre. If those guys are there, this is a pick that the Jazz can afford to miss on. Given all the talent they have. So swinging for the fences and being patient, I think the Jazz can afford to do that. Some teams can't. And it's because they've drafted so well, I think they can afford to.
All right, if the primary interest here in Salt Lake is who are the Jazz going to draft, the secondary interest is certainly where is DeLon Wright going to go in this draft. What do you think the best-case scenario is for DeLon?
Best case is probably 21 to the Mavs. There's a team that likes him. 24 to the Cavaliers, they like him. 22 to the Bulls, they like him a little bit. And then if he gets past all of those teams, then maybe something like 28 to Boston, 30 to Golden State. I think he goes somewhere in that 21 to 30 range.
And do teams like him because he's kind of a plug-and-play NBA-ready guy? Even though he's a little older at 23, he can step into an established team and be a good backup point guard?
Yeah, and I think he will be. I actually like DeLon Wright. I think he will be, and that's exactly what he is. He's a plug-and-play, comes in more NBA-ready than most guys right now. And look, a lot of his success will be he improved his jump shot a lot between his junior and senior year. If that continues to improve, and if he continues to be able to knock down shots, because it's just so critical in the NBA anymore, then I think he could maybe even be a starter in the league someday. But I think most teams are looking at him as a nice backup point guard.
A lot of the mock drafts have a glut of big men going in like the first 6-7 picks. Is that going to be an anomaly in the NBA now with the importance and the dominance of wing players in the NBA basketball style?
I think it's mostly a combination of best players available / team needs right now. If a team really needed a wing, then I think they go wing. But, you know, you look at Minnesota, there's not necessarily a clear need there for a wing. I think for the power forward position is probably the position they need the most, and Karl Towns makes sense there. Lakers need help everywhere, frankly, but they have a gaping hole at center, and finding a center in free agency or anything else is very, very difficult to find. And so they go there. You know, Philly set up front. And so I do think that, you know, drafting a guard makes sense for them. The Knicks need help everywhere, and so they can go in those directions. But then, you know, as you go through the list, like Orlando, guards aren't really, a huge need for them. And so I think it's just a combination of where the talent lies. Look, D'Angelo Russell and Emmanuel Mudiay are elite guard prospects here. And then as far as wings go, I think Justice Winslow and Mario Hezonja are elite prospects as well, and I think all those guys are gone in the top seven.
Hey, Chad, before we let you go, and Chad Ford with us from ESPN.com, give us a name that's going to be a surprise in your mind Thursday, either going higher than we expect or somebody that's maybe falling and might go lower than we expect.
Well, you know, if it's a surprise, it'll surprise me too, because I'm the one projecting all this stuff. It's always a hard question for me, because I'm like, you know, tell me the guy who's the most underrated. Well, I'm rating him, so it's a little bit tough. I'm trying to figure it out. But here's a name of a guy who I think might be sliding right now, just from signals that I'm picking up, and that's Tyus Jones out of Duke. I think a lot of people will say, here's the point guard who won a national championship. Here's the pure point guard. We've been thinking for a long time he's a slam dunk to go to the Rockets at 18. I'm not sure he's a slam dunk anymore. He also hurt his back in a workout, and I think that scared some teams off a little bit. If he starts sliding into the 20s and even into the late 20s, that wouldn't shock me.
You will see him on television, hear him on radio, and see him online a lot more. If you thought you saw him a lot up till now, the next 48 to 30, 72 hours is going to be crazy for Chad Ford. Chad, thanks as always, and maybe we'll catch up with you next week for a little recap. But thanks as always, and good luck on Thursday.
Yeah, you'll be sick of me by then. You won't want to catch up with me in a week. I'm sick of myself already. So, thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks, Chad Ford with us from ESPN and ESPN.com.